Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 18. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Dark Paranormal, Season 18, Episode 4. And I hope you all had a wonderful Christmas, if you celebrate it. And if not, you had a wonderful week. To give a little insight into my week, it's the first time in the show's history that when I record these episodes for The Dark Paranormal, which I record on a Wednesday for our Patreons, it's landed on a Christmas Day and also a New Year's Day. So if your week has looked anything like my week, then I feel sorry for you and I wish you the best. But we will get through it. Next week's New Year, and then we literally enter the New Year. And as discussed with our Patreons recently, we have some very exciting things hopefully taking place in 2025 to do with the show. And genuinely, I think it will just add another string to the bow of what we can offer as a podcast. And I do mean that sincerely in terms of offer, because when I think of the dark paranormal, I think about what I would want to listen to. Not just as a podcast fan, but more specifically, a paranormal podcast fan. In fact, my phone recently told me I need to get rid of a lot of things, and I was devastated to realize the majority of them were very old archived episodes of podcasts that I love. I've never been a fan of the word change when it comes to something you know and love. So therefore, we're going to improve your experience with this show in 2025. Now, for people who dip in and out of the podcast, you're probably expecting a list of names right now. But we've moved our Patreons to the end of the show to make sure they still get the credit they fully deserve, but also to make sure we get to the experience quicker. But at the beginning of the show, we will still plug Patreon because we've built our wonderful community of like-minded paranormal enthusiasts over there on Patreon. When you become one of our Patreon team members, not only do you support the show, but you get everything on this main feed, both ad-free and early before everyone else. You also have the opportunity to gain access to our Patreon-only podcast, Dark Bites. Dark Bites releases each and every Sunday of the year. That's 52 times a year without a break. And so far, we've managed to rack up a back catalogue of over 70 hours worth of Patreon-only content, which, if you're not a very festive person, you could sit and binge over the holiday period. But I say this each week because it's true. The best thing about the Patreon is the community itself. Each and every experience that we reveal on Dark Bites normally ends with the line, "Thank you for providing a safe space for my experience." But it's not me providing that space, it's the community. The respect everyone shows each other and the conversations people have, even in disagreement, are just wonderful to witness. I'm sure, like you, have been a member of many paranormal forums online, and they normally always turn toxic, or they feel the need for a hierarchical structure where somebody can't have something said because an admin says no and politics get involved, yada yada yada. This place is literally paranormal harmony, and it sincerely continues to surprise me and blow my mind the number of wonderful, like-minded individuals who have no agenda, who sign up. And it's those individuals and myself who extend an exclusive invitation to you to join our Patreon. Head over to patreon.com patreon.com/thedarkparanormal and gain ad-free early access as well as access to that wonderful community. But we are all here to listen to episode 4 of season 18, and today's episode will be slightly different, and the reason for that is twofold. Number one, many, many people ask me what is my personal favourite paranormal experience that I've ever come across. And as many podcasters will tell you, Christmas week is not the best for downloads in general, but I still obviously want to give you some great content. So what I thought we'd do is I would provide you with my favourite paranormal experience I've ever come across. And a huge thank you goes to the now deceased Shane Leslie for the 1955 book Ghost Stories, which focuses on ghost stories from a Catholic perspective. And it's within this book that I came across my favourite ever paranormal experience. The reason why? There's so much that's still to be discovered about this experience. Now, although the book itself will be out of copyright literally in 3 or 4 days, whenever 2025 hits, we're not at that point yet, so I've had to make my version of the story which is regaled in that book. But all of the facts, all of the paranormal events, are as true as they are in the book. There are no sound effects in this upcoming episode, because this experience does not need anything extra. I'm so obsessed with this story, I literally took a photograph of every page and sent it to Paul Bestel from the Ghost Story Guys to ask him if he could locate the building in question, because that's one of many questions that remain unanswered in this experience. And hopefully by the end of this episode, you'll understand why this is my favourite experience to date. But right now, it's time to lower those lights. Make yourself comfortable, and of course, as always, leave your disbelief at the door, as we hear all about a diabolical land. This story is fascinating, because the main events are backed by detailed statements from multiple witnesses who experienced them firsthand. Early on, these witnesses didn't even know that other people had encountered similar events. No scientific explanations or clear purpose for these events seem plausible. Adding to the intrigue is the fact that most participants have insisted on keeping their identities secret. And legal constraints mean the property itself must remain anonymous. Despite these challenges, from what I've read, this appears to be a chilling case of a spirit, or perhaps something much, much more powerful, having a direct malevolent intervention in our world. So, what do we know about this place? Well, we know it's a substantial residence in the English countryside. The house boasts numerous bedrooms, exceeding a dozen, set within its own expansive grounds. It reveals a stark contrast to the conventional aura of enigma and darkness typically linked to ghost narratives. The structure is rooted in medieval origins and features Tudor elements in the cellars, predominantly exhibiting Georgian architecture. It boasts expansive windows, spacious and luminous rooms, broad corridors that have witnessed candlelight through to the light bulb, and of course a massive contemporary garden featuring flower beds and lawns, one of which houses a small but deep pond, arguably rejuvenated regularly by underwater springs, and also an ancient quarry, possibly the source of the stone used for the original house's construction. At the outset of this experience, a recently wed couple, both Catholics, moved into a home which had been permanently inhabited prior to their acquisition. For around a decade, they resided there in peace and quiet. The countryside bore no whispers of anything unusual regarding the house, nor is that region of England particularly inclined towards tales of spectres, spirits, or similar entities. On a midsummer day, a young man residing in the house sought out a comprehensive medical evaluation from a nearby physician. The doctor, noting this man's robust health, as was evidenced by both his appearance and the requisite tests, inquired directly for clarification. This was provided, and following assurances of confidentiality, documented immediately. It turns out the reason for this man's need of a checkup was one bright June afternoon, shortly after lunch. The young man and a lady of the house explored a room with French windows opening out to the lawn, when the young man unexpectedly collapsed. Upon regaining consciousness, the man implied to the lady that his heart could be somewhat compromised. This explanation was skeptically accepted by the lady, upon his commitment to consult a physician immediately. And it's this appointment with the doctor where the reality of the story differed significantly. He told the doctor his collapse came following a brief backwards glance whilst departing with his hostess, when he noticed a strange brown figure trailing behind closely, its hands masking its face. The man confided in the doctor, saying that the real reason he'd passed out was an exceptionally strong feeling that he would die of shock if the figure was to move its hands away and show its face. At the time, no one but the doctor who took that statement knew that explanation. About 2 months later, during the middle of the day, a housemaid was going about her business in that same room where the young man had his experience and passed out. She was startled to see a figure by the window opposite her, that she thought was the owner of the house, who she'd just seen somewhere else. But the realization it wasn't him slapped her across the face as the figure slowly moved through a solid wall and disappeared. She mulled over telling people about what she'd seen, but feared ridicule. So she kept it to herself, but the next day decided she would tell the doctor. So she told the doctor, and it happened to be the same doctor that the young man had told the story previously mentioned to. And like that first man, the doctor asked her to write a full statement describing everything she saw. Interestingly, the housemaid did add she wasn't too scared because, in her own words, it didn't seem like the figure was interested in me. Once she left, the doctor noted one thing was very evident. Not only did the accounts match, but both the young man and the housemaid claimed that whatever they saw in the middle of the day, light could not pass through it. Both of them claimed that the shape was odd. It was unclear. It was definitely a person, but it didn't really feel three-dimensional. Another interesting aspect was both witnesses only saw the figure for a few seconds, but when questioned, they shown they were sharp observers. Like this thing had implanted its image in their brain. Apparently, the figure looked like it was covered in some grimy brown stuff, if stuff is the right term. No shadow, no feet in sight, and the figure moved in a way that was hard to explain, almost like it was rippling or shifting within itself. Neither observer spotted a face, but the young man's description of hands covering it, hinted that they were made of the same material as the rest of the figure, or its drapes, or whatever fits best to describe the surface they both saw. The figure was shorter than average, looking like almost a squat, and it gave off an awkward energy. It looked hunched, whether it was still or moving. These are the only two times in over 2 years that anyone saw this figure, or any figure for that matter. But since then, a bunch of strange things started happening in the house more and more often. A priest in the house was woken up by loud knocks on his bedroom door. He flipped on the light, sat up, and bravely said, "Come in." But the door stayed shut. However, when he wrote up his declaration days later, he acknowledged that somehow, something had passed in. This thing was unseen, but definitely heard. For 2 hours, it felt like a big animal was roaming around the room, grunting and gasping, totally ignoring the Reverend Father's pleas to leave. The priest declined to mention anything about this to the homeowners. One time, an army officer stayed over for the weekend, but left before breakfast on Sunday, leaving a lame note to apologize to the host. A couple of days later, when a mutual friend asked why he acted so weird, the army officer shared a wild story in confidence. This was also written down. Apparently, he was getting ready for bed on the Saturday night, about 11:30, when he switched off his lamp and suddenly felt fingers brushing his face. He quickly jumped up and turned the lamp back on, but nothing was there. Thinking he was imagining things, he turned the lamp off again. And right away, the same thing happened. As soon as the last glimmer of light faded, fingers brushed across his face. The officer said it was unsettling, but he wasn't scared. He got up, flipped on all the lights, searched the room, and, wide awake, started reading a book in bed. He quickly realized he couldn't focus on reading. This strange, unsettling thought kept creeping in. He slowly felt this urge to end it all, with no real reason other than a sudden, deep sense of hopelessness. He battled the idea with his common sense for over an hour. His everyday life and thoughts didn't hint at such a dark move. Yet the idea kept creeping in like a thick fog. He suddenly felt like he should just jump into the pond outside, which he hadn't really paid any attention to. The officer says he ended up climbing out of the bedroom window. And once he did, all the pressure was gone. He no longer felt the oppression, the depression. And the poor guy felt so weak and shaken, he couldn't stay in the house anymore. On another occasion, the lady of the house and a friend were heading upstairs to bed after turning off the lights downstairs. The stairs were super bright, but both women heard heavy footsteps behind them, like a guy in wet carpet slippers. As they pressed against the wall, moving out of the way, the footsteps went up the stairs, past them, and faded down a lit hallway. Yet, both didn't see a thing. Let's take a quick break in proceedings to talk to you about the holiday season and the M word. Not mistletoe, money. Because food, decorations, presents, they don't come for free. And at this time of year, everyone knows to the last digit what is in their bank account. Well, I know I do anyway. And when I get my statement in January, I look and think, I didn't need to go out then. I didn't need to buy that. I didn't need to buy as many of those. And I kick myself and say, next year, you'll do something better with your money. And that was me rinse and repeat until last year when I actually did. Now, you'll have heard me talk about Acorns before, and there's a reason for it. Because Acorns make it easy to start automatically saving and investing for you, your kids, your retirement, even during the holidays. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that matches you. And you don't need a ton of time. You can create your Acorns account and start automatically investing your money in just 5 minutes. And you don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now. That could be $5 a day or just even your spare change. That's right, Acorns can round every purchase you make up to a dollar and automatically invest that spare change for you. So if you buy a coffee on the way to work, that's investing. And you can get bonus investments just for buying the stuff you need from the brands you love. The change I said I made last year, well, I looked at all the excess I would have spent and I invested it. And believe me, guys, that's why Acorns are so important. And I'll be doing the same this year, because when you look at your statement in January and you see you've invested money instead of wasting it, it's a great feeling. So head over to acorns.com/darkparanormal or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsements. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investment involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/darkparanormal.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
A year after, the figure was spotted twice in daylight. Keeping it secret now just wasn't an option anymore. The homeowner, who hadn't seen or heard anything himself strange, asked two friends for advice. One of them was the doctor who'd been consulted by the witnesses of the brown hunchback figure. Permission was obtained to disclose their stories, and then came to light not only the experience of the priest and the army officer, but several other experiences that were encountered by various individuals associated with the house at different times during the preceding months. A visitor shared their experience of staying in another room and, like the priest, was jolted awake by a loud knock on the door. He didn't invite the visitor in, instead he turned on his bedside light and was shocked to see the hearth rug shoot up the chimney. This ridiculous show lost its fun when the confused onlooker realized there was never a rug at the fireplace. He got up, opened the door, saw nothing in the hallway, checked out the white-painted chimney, and convinced there was no trick of the light, saw that the chimney register was already in place, meaning it was sealed off completely. He was determined to put his terrifying event behind him when he finally went back to sleep. But he experienced a nightmare that affected him so greatly that when he woke, he made notes about the experience. And it's very interesting to note his recollection of the dream revealed it was connected with drowning, hatred, and horror, which will become of note later. There were other reports of people being woken up at night by knocks, and there was one other daylight incident noted, but that happened after the private investigation started. The homeowner, who hadn't seen anything out of the ordinary until then, was busy one morning hammering a big nail into the staircase wall to hang a family portrait. He climbed a few rungs of a sturdy new stepladder positioned onto a wide landing. A friend below had his hand on the stepladder, watching the hammering just a few feet above him. The friend was surprised to see the homeowner toss the hammer over his shoulder and make a wild leap backwards from the steps to the stairs. Aside from a little shake that comes with the territory after such a move, the stepladder stayed put. After checking the homeowner was okay, the friend casually asked what he was thinking. The homeowner said, just as he was about to hit the nail with the hammer for the first time, holding a 6-inch wire nail in his left hand, he felt the hammer yanked out of his right hand by some crazy force. Instinct made him jump. About 3 months before the figure showed up, an infant in the house kept having weird nightmares and then told their mum that mice were running over their face at night. No mice were in the room where the child was. Even traps were set just in case. The child was moved to another room, and both the nightmares and the mice stopped. This experience is so interesting because it ties to the earlier story of the army officer who felt fingers on his cheek in the dark. And the room the child complained about had never been slept in before. For at least 30 years, maybe longer, it was just a storeroom. After checking out all the important details, a few key points started to pop up. Before the child's bad dreams and mice, nothing weird happened. Then peculiar things started happening more and more. When it came to nighttime occurrences, it was clear that whenever the witness noted the time, it was almost exactly 2 o'clock in the morning. It seems like everyone else's experiences were the same hour. No signs were seen or reported day or night, except for a day or two around the full moon. It was, and still is, unclear how this earthly event connected to the spiritual disturbances happening. The priest who would eventually exorcise the property mentioned he'd seen something like this before and found it eerily coincidental, but didn't say any more. All of the strange happenings happened in one area of the house, the newest part. Every room, except maybe the staircase, had some creepy event linked to it. Meanwhile, the older section with kitchens, offices, servant bedrooms had no reports of anything unusual. There was a link between the child's story regarding mice running over his face and fingers touching the soldier's face in the dark. Other stories about dreams and depression were out there too, mixed with thoughts of suicide, wet feet, and despair. A secret inquiry, known only to a few, was suddenly interrupted by a shocking event. Despite the one maid having seen something strange about a year and a half ago, without any further problems, one afternoon, a different maid set down her dustpan and brush, walked out of the house, and jumped into the pond from the lawn. She was already gone when they found her. The follow-up investigations, both formal and informal, found no clear reason why this woman would take her own life. Her life seemed free from sadness or hidden troubles. Although the official ruling was suicide due to her alleged unstable mind, and some vague tales about a distant relative who was in an asylum, nothing truly explained the mysteriousness of her actions. The sad event got people in the village talking. No ghost stories came out of it, but something exceptionally interesting did. You see, an old quiet farmer from the area, whose granddad was the village schoolmaster, casually suggested to the homeowner that the record office might be worth checking out. Examining the record office papers and the inquisitions of postmortems of the area throughout history revealed some very interesting and bizarre things. Since the time of James I, there were random years where a surprising number of suicides happened at the quarry pond in the garden. There were gaps of 50 or 60 years between these suicide waves. Nothing going on in between. The lengths of the periods and the number of suicides in each group were all over the place. But the spikes, be them 50 or 60 years apart, were clear. There was a farmer who lived about 7 or 8 miles away, chose to end his life by walking across the fields from his farm to the pond just to shoot himself, instead of doing it at his farm. Some hung from the trees that surrounded the pond. Others, like the maid, simply jumped in. The house owner, equipped with these alarming facts and the complete documentation of all the recent events, then reached out to the bishop. At first, the bishop played it cool, until he went through the details. Immediately after that, it became an imperative for the bishop to contact the homeowner at all costs, and he said he'd used his bishop powers to support a full exorcism of the house. For those unfamiliar with these topics, it should be noted that authorization for a serious exorcism of this type is so uncommon. In fact, it's difficult to even get the text or the instructions to do so. The bishop himself has to specially pick or approve the priest. Before the ritual, which includes a mass in or around the haunted area, the priest has to fast for 24 hours. During this time, he should focus on prayer, following the idea that some things only come out through prayer and fasting. In serious situations, as evidently this was deemed, the bishop can let the chosen priest do the exorcism multiple times if the first one doesn't work. This follows the apostolic call to keep praying and not give up. It shows the church gets that we don't know much and aren't really supposed to about what comes next. It's not about science, it's about belief. Before the exorcism happened, another experience was noted. The witness was part of the unofficial investigative committee. Therefore, he was aware of the previous events, though he'd never seen anything happen himself. That's why he felt like his story was just his own opinion. The church, however, had a different opinion, and said it needed to be added to the file. Spending the night at the house during Easter weekend, he stayed in one of the newer bedrooms. Nothing weird had happened there yet. On Saturday night, he hit the hay just before midnight, after a fun party, totally not thinking about ghosts. He fell asleep, but woke up later, as he thought someone had called his name. He felt the urge was so strong that he'd been called. He got out of bed, opened the door to the hallway, but the house was eerily silent, and his name was not called again. With moonlight pouring in through the uncurtained windows, the room was almost as bright as day, so he didn't switch on the lights. The witnesses realized the link between Easter and the full moon only the next morning. A quick look around the hallway, he headed back to bed. Checking his watch on the way, it was 3:02. Which is interesting, because when he tried to use this argument to convince others that the affair had nothing to do with the ghost, it backfired on him. He forgot daylight saving time was in effect. So Greenwich Mean Time was 2:02, meaning he actually woke up around 2:00. The witness said he was lying in bed, trying to roll over to sleep, when he suddenly realized he couldn't move. He couldn't roll over or move his head or limbs, but he realized he could open and close his eyes. He first thought he may have hurt his back or done something else to himself. Before he could figure out his next move, whether to shout for help or just wait it out, he sensed, without seeing or hearing anything, that something awful and unfriendly was rushing towards him from far away. The thing showed up, and the witness admits he was purely terrified. Even though this thing was invisible and silent, it felt like it was lunging at the observer. And then, something else popped up that the observer hadn't noticed before, pushing the first thing away. The witness says he prayed a lot and kept it up. It kept trying to attack the witness, but each time the other thing stepped in to stop it. The awkward moment dragged on until the witness suddenly heard a rooster crow, and it all stopped right away. The witness, realizing he could move, stood up and checked his watch. 3 hours passed. The sun was coming up. But he didn't hit the bed again. All fear was gone, so he dozed off in a chair, realizing his mattress was soaked through with sweat from his dream or his ordeal. The priest who was chosen to execute the exorcism had conducted a thorough investigation of purported supernatural phenomena. He decided to say the mass in the room where the child had mentioned the mice. He claimed it was just an experiment, suggesting that the child's experiences could be the first in a series, and that the room might be the gateway of the monster. He thought anyone who had slept there could have opened that gate. The priest decided to hold his mass and perform the rite on a full moon day, noticing the link between the moon's phases and the strength of the manifestations. Taking place as it did in the morning prior to breakfast, the mass and the rite transpired without incident. But that night, two people in rooms facing the lawn and pond were stirred awake by a noise that sounded like dogs howling outside. The moon was bright and the night clear, so they could see there was obviously nothing on the lawn making these sounds, even though they could pinpoint exactly where they were coming from. It was 2 a.m. The observers gazed in astonishment at the vacant lawn, whilst the howling gradually moved away in irregular intervals, as if it was being forced away. Then it vanished into the distance and became silent. There have been no problems in the house since then. But remember, no one knows where this house is. And this brilliant report is from 1955. 69 years ago. So, is there a seemingly stately home somewhere which perhaps has had yet another spate of suicide since? And if so, what's drawing people to that pond, almost offering themselves ritualistically? Or did the exorcism work? And the final sounds of the retreating dogs, an actual retreat of a defeated evil? I hope you enjoyed listening to what genuinely is my favourite paranormal experience that I've ever come across. And again, a huge thank you to Shane Leslie's ghost book. The story is in there. It's a quite rare book. It was made in 1955, and you can still get it on places like Amazon, etc. And although relatively a rather large book for the topic of ghosts, as normally nowadays, it's a 50-page long read, it's a book mainly made up of clergy stories from the Catholic Church. And it's exceptionally believable, and it's a wonderful buy. But this particular experience has stayed with me ever since I read it, for the obvious reasons of the mysteries still yet to be solved. Where is this house? Is there or are there any more suicides that have taken place at that pond? And why that pond? Why did a man walk over 8 miles to go and shoot himself at that pond? Why were people willingly jumping into the pond, hanging themselves from trees around the pond? There's also an interesting thing which may crop up in our everyday lives, in terms of paranormal experiences, that is. And that's the conflicting experiences for the same thing, i.e. the young boy mentioning mice running across his face, because that's the only thing his brain can jump to, yet the soldier describes it as fingers brushing across his face. Genuinely, I think they're both the same thing, just viewed through different perspectives. And then we, of course, have the wonderful part about the soldier climbing out of the window because he's so desperate to take his own life all of a sudden. But the moment his body and brain leaves the confines of the house, i.e. hanging from the windowsill, it's gone. He no longer wishes to kill himself. What malevolence and power lives on that land? And this is why it intrigued me ever since I read it, because I don't know what land. I really wish I did, just so I could see if there was any sort of correlating data regarding any suicides, etc. But what a fascinating story, I'm sure you'll agree. Now, before we leave you, of course, we need to say a huge thank you to our wonderful newest Patreons, to all of our Patreons. But our new Patreons, of course, get their name read out at the end of each show. And thank you so much, because you do truly keep the show going. Like I said at the start, if you like the sound of early ad-free releases, including debuts and finales, as well as being able to gain access to the Dark Bites back catalogue, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal, just like the following wonderful team members have: C.S. McConnell, Tiffany Williamson, Ruby, Jane Anderton, Jake Bonshire, Lee, Megan Malcolm, Rin, Lena Dominguez, Tristan B., Daniel Sneed, Stacey Bainey, Brandy Levy Dot, Dev G., Inga Louise, Amy, Jasmine Redmond, Emma DeClario, Paula Strauss, Lavender Lynn, Sarah Saul, and Jess. Thank you so much for supporting the show, guys. It genuinely means the world to me, and it allows the show to keep going. So if you like the sound of early ad-free releases, and of course those Dark Bites Patreon episodes, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. Now, of course, our Patreons will get this on Christmas Day, so Merry Christmas, Patreons, for those who celebrate it, of course. and everyone else will receive it on Friday, Twixmas as it's known. So I hope you had a wonderful Christmas again if you celebrate it. Have a wonderful weekend, and I'll speak to you all on Monday for our next installment of Dark Realms. Until then, remember, when you're discussing the paranormal, always try and leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll see you next time, right here on The Dark Paranormal.